Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Tonight, our show is Dialysis Advocates, and it'll be hosted by Arlene Mullen. I want to remind everyone that TS Radio and all of its shows, including Dialysis Advocates, is brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. Everyone is cordially invited. I encourage you to be there if you can. There's a lot of networking to be done, a lot of people that have had some very successful plans put in motion to fight the abuse, the fraud, the waste, the discrimination in government, and in many of the programs like we're talking about tonight. With that, I'm going to turn this over to your host, Arlene Mullen.
Thanks, Marty, and I wish to thank both you and Marty and Marcel for giving us this opportunity to speak out on behalf of dialysis patients. I'm the co-host tonight, as always, every time I can get him, is Greg Coleman. And we have, we're talking about patients tonight, family members who have stories to tell. We kind of sometimes we're trying to bring in patient stories to refresh that this is a problem that's really going on. We also would like to warn patients that to watch what is written in your records, that they character assassinate you and it'll blacklist you out of other clinics. And it is happening with the two big providers right now as we're speaking. Every single day they're getting creative charting and character assassinations. Zabeth, would you like to tell your story?
Okay, you want me to begin?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Beth from Boston, and I grew up with my brother who was mentally challenged, and he he ended up with dialysis. And he passed away on December 21st, 2013. He had been on dialysis, I'm going to say, 5 years or better. And he had been with, we were with two, maybe three different groups. Now, I always found they weren't easy, but like for most people, you don't want to rock the boat when you don't have alternatives. And so if I felt like that and I wasn't the personal patient, I can just imagine the fears that the patients go through. And this is why it's taking so long to be a public road like everything else. Now, back a few years, I became an advocate, a voice at the Boston State House, helping those, and we're all going to need a voice sooner or later in our life, helping those like disabled people and mentally challenged people who want rights, you know, whether it's to jobs or whatever. And that made me really aware, passing information about what I had experienced with dialysis. Now, some in the politician's life, you know, I could tell they were aware of it. But I feel the bottom line, before I tell my story, the bottom line is either out of fear or not getting enough money for whatever. These are giant corporations, and it's all about the money. So a lot of people, I went to like 5 different lawyers with my case, and they took their time. I made a lot of copies, and they all read them. But no one wanted to take on the case, and I feel that it was a combination. You know, they want to see their money right away. This obviously was going to take a very long time. And second, they don't want to go up against these corporate giants. You know, and they're not regulated, which is a big shock. And when I tell my story, people here in the USA, and I've told it up and down the East Coast where I travel, everyone looks like you have two heads. And they look in shock and disbelief and go, here? This is going on here in the USA, in our country? And they just are disbelief. So now, with my brother, I was his legal healthcare proxy, and they all knew he was not to sign anything. They had to put everything through me, and his primary cares and all those people when he had to go in the hospitals, they all respected that, all of them. Now, with the dialysis, the final, I don't know what word to call it. Anyway, in his last couple of years at this particular, he was there Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. He would go for like 3-4 hours, okay. And I understood that they couldn't eat, you know, a big meal. But to help him pass the time of day, I gave him like a little baggie of gummy bears, some chewing gum, and a little water. Okay. So that was the standard that they knew. Now, on the Friday, at 5 o'clock when I went in to pick him up, they said, we think maybe you should bring him to the hospital. And I said, really? But no one would explain to me what had happened. And I looked over in a loud voice. They were standing near him. I said, Robert, what do you want? And he said, I would like a cup of tea and go to Melrose. They all knew this was our favorite hospital that knew him well, the Melrose Wakefield Hospital in Melrose, Mass. Now, we're talking 5 o'clock on a Friday night, which was going to take me a good hour better to get him to, and they all knew what he meant when he said that word, Melrose. No one said nothing. He was so weak, I had to take him out to the car in a wheelchair. Now, I'm riding up and down the highways in bumper-to-bumper traffic, and my son was sitting next to him in the back seat. My brother was behind me. Well, my brother ended up dying. I pulled over, called an ambulance. They revived him, and they brought him to the local hospital. And by the time they set him up, he must have had, no exaggeration, at least 8 tubes going in and out of him. And guess what, everyone? I have proof. I took pictures. Now, so they had ambulances there all the time at this unit, you know, picking and dropping off patients, you know, taking them to their nursing homes or wherever they live. So to have ambulances there was no big deal. So my brother ended up dying the next morning, Saturday. Now, the Friday before, they were told not to use part of his, how do you pronounce that word, vestibular? And the Friday before, I was waiting a good hour. And every time I called in, the man who answered said, oh, he's almost ready, he's almost ready. Well, when my brother came out, I said, Robert, what took you so long? He said, they used the wrong part of my arm. And they had been told not to use what part to use. And I said, they did. So when I called the nurses up all that week, I was being told that, yes, I would get a copy of what happened, which I never did. So long story short, he passed away. And when you're a legal healthcare proxy, I think this is so wrong. You have basically so many minutes, so many hours to hurry up and get whatever you need to get. So I wanted copies from the hospital. But I see once I had a minute in my shock to look at some of it, it had been changed. And then I found a paper that they had attempted to get my brother's signature for something. So it's been a long, hard road, and I went to the state, shared my story, but there again, the state, this is the second time they threw him under the bus because I'm mentally challenged. A few years before, we had an issue at a hospital tying him down in a chair, which was illegal. And I had gone to the state. So whether the state, the people at that moment that are handling your case, you know, is getting paid off, too afraid to, you know, rock the boat. So after a few weeks, they came back and said, no, they said, you know, and that was the end of it. So I can understand the fear of the patients. I really can. So I'm proud to be an advocate, proud to be a voice for those that need one, glad to be sharing info from the passing of my brother, because it was the stupidity of dialysis treatment and getting away with it. He was mentally challenged, and he was taken advantage of more than once. So my ode to my brother Robert, my dearest brother, where have you gone? Why did you leave? Why didn't you stay? Staying alive is a lot to suffer when one is not well. Over time, all the tests, the illnesses, all the daily meds, dialysis took its toll. Why did I not see you were getting sick once again? Why did I listen to others? How could a daily routine at the dialysis turn out to be anything but? Was it your turn? If you are with Mama Sally in the heavens, out of pain and suffering, okay. No, that's not true. I'm waiting for you to come into the kitchen for your meal. Just one more Christmas, a new radio, cassette player. This was a long, hard road, and we fought the good fight. For us, the pain of watching you pass and missing you is unbearable. Your memory all the time at church. I thank you for letting me to do this. But like I said, for all of us in the big picture, for whatever reason, you figure it out, and I'm sure a lot of you have the answers, why governments and politicians let this continue. I thank you.
I thank you. You've got me in tears. It was a hard road, and I know that you always felt bad, but you know something, Zabeth, you were there for him, and a lot of patients have nobody.
Yeah, he lived with me. He lived with us, so I made sure he had his food and his meds and all that. Yeah, you're right. Thank you for saying that. A lot of people don't have anyone.
Yeah, but he had you, and you, I know how hard it has been because we've kept in contact over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's stories like this, Beth, that gets it out, because I tell you, it reached my heart, and I've been there with you.
Yes.
And I thank you for that voice. There's one thing I also wanted to bring up. If I remember correctly, I thought he died, passed in that back seat. I know that.
Yes, yes.
Karen.
Originally, oh, yes, yes. He died in behind me in my back seat in the busy traffic. And
yes.
And I didn't know it. My son sitting next to him thought, you know, he was dozing. And then he was going, Ma, Ma, I can't get him. So we pulled over and I called an ambulance, which took a few minutes in the busy traffic. And when they came, they had him on the ground. They revived him and got him to the hospital. And by the time I got to the hospital, he was all set up. I have pictures. At least 8 tubes going in and out. 8 tubes. I don't know. And then they wanted to stop it. And they pulled the stuff. I said, no, I didn't give you permission. So then they rehooked it. And anyway.
Didn't they also offer him suckers to sign something, even though you had the durable power of attorney?
Oh, yes, yes. That they, because Robert was a child in his mind. So if you went up to Rob and said, hey, Robert, I get some lollipops or some gum, and you do. See, some of the stories, and it was great when I met you and listened to the conference calls that you had and listened to those wonderful, you know, patients of dialysis sharing their stories. I learned a lot from those conference calls that you had and from those patients. And that's where I became aware of the mistreatments that he and being taken advantage of,
that
you know, from them. Because if you went up to Robert and said, oh, Robert, I got to pour this medicine in your whatever, he would have trusted you. Robert would have said, okay. He wouldn't have questioned. He figured, you're the nurse. You're the doctor. That's what I mean, a child's mind.
Yeah, they gave him suckers when they wanted something from him. Am I wrong?
I believe so. I believe that was going on more than... So anyway, I don't know. But this is, everything else comes out in the news sooner or later. But the more I spoke to people, you know, in the world of whatever you want to call it, politics, BS, whatever, the more I spoke and shared, the more I realized that until patients themselves have the combination of the bravery and backup from those who can help so they don't get kicked out, only until then will they share their stories. And it's going to take a long time. And it's sad.
Well, it's on its way now. We've been promised this year. Greg, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I'd just like, good evening, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hi. What's your name?
Gregory.
Hi, Gregory.
I'm sorry for your loss, and that was a tragic situation, and I can relate because I've heard and seen many stories being a dialysis patient myself.
Uh-huh.
I just want to second what Arlene said. He was blessed to have you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I like the fact that you detected something that average people don't. You went in the center and you automatically, instinctively knew something wasn't right, but you also knew your brother needed the treatment, and this is where they get you. They know that they have the power over life and death, and
yeah.
This is why they do so many abusive practices.
Yes, yes. Like my kids have said to me over and over, Ma, they let you take Uncle Robert at 5 o'clock on a busy highway on a Friday night, and they knew he needed the help. They knew.
What company was this? What company was it? Fresenius, DaVita, DCI?
DaVita.
Okay.
Zabeth, can I ask you, were you ever able to see his medical records and see anything in them that might have indicated prior knowledge of a problem or that should have been acknowledged as a grooming problem?
Yes. I'd have to go through all my records, but yes, reading things I did detect. But proving is another thing. And if you have a mentally challenged person, this is why all the patients that live in fear, the only way it's going to finally come out is they have to be guaranteed that their treatment will not change unless it's for the better. And only they speak out.
That is absolutely, to be threatened like that, even silently threatened, to live under that kind of threat, that if you complain about poor treatment, maltreatment, neglect, abuse, things you have a right to complain about, and these are things that should be addressed immediately, that you live under that threat, that if you speak that out loud, you're basically handed a death sentence.
Yes.
This is just absolutely... Boom. Arlene, I don't know how you haven't lost your mind. I would have.
Mind, Marty?
Yes.
I mean, all hospitals, patients have the freedom to complain of treatment.
Yes.
But
well,
not
yes.
with this.
And that's because the government is involved in this with full knowledge of the terminations, the abuses of care. They don't care. And
so they're getting paid off.
Well, they don't care. They pay the bill. See, this was passed in 1972 or 75. I can't remember.
Oh.
I got a mental block.
Oh.
And it's a public benefit, which means everybody that's a citizen of the United States is entitled and paid for by the government to have dialysis. It's the only medical illness that is that way. The nephrologists own you, because they have the contracts in the hospital, and when you go to the hospital and you're diagnosed with renal failure, you belong to that nephrology group, and sometimes they're the only show in town. Greg could speak about that a little bit more as a patient's view, I'd like to hear.
What are we talking about, the greed, the hate, the corruption?
Well, how
the
it feels that you can't complain without, you have no rights, and no matter where you go, it goes back to the oversight, which is them.
Yeah. Within that system, there really is no method for you to complain, because they tell you, well, don't go outside of the center. If you have problems, let's work them out right here. We can talk to the clinical manager, the social worker, or whoever. Well, problem is, all of those people are not there to help you in the first place. They're salesmen. And their primary purpose for existing is to generate massive profits for the company that they work for. They will lie to you and say, I'm your advocate, and yes, we're going to talk to this person and that person on your behalf. But if you think logically and with common sense, who do you listen to on a job? The customer or the person who signs your paycheck? So that is a fantasy. And when you complain in center, it goes somewhere else to headquarters. If you complain outside, like if you go to the end-stage renal disease networks, they're in on a conspiracy. So what happens is your complaint goes in a circle, and there is no resolution to your problem because everybody is involved in the conspiracy, as Arlene was saying, the government. Well, you can go to opensecrets.org and you can find out how many of your congressmen and senators are getting money from these corporations. So they pay, they grease their pockets to not pay attention. So, I mean, that's all I can say. It's just one big ball of corruption, and it's circular. And like Zabeth said, the only way to break the circle is for a system of protection to be put into place where patients feel free to tell the truth. And like with your brother passing, I know that they knew that he was about to die, and
yes,
immediately they went into cover-up mode. That's what they did. Because I've seen it. They tried me. Tell me what I didn't see when a
really?
Patient died. And it didn't work. But they got about 99% of the patients to say what they wanted them to say, but I wasn't one. I said, if anybody asks me, I'm going to tell them exactly what I saw and what I heard.
Well, it comes to your survival. I mean, you depend on these people. And I know that when I first blew the whistle back in 1998, we had the TV cameras, and patients were really scared because the for-profits took over a while back. And, you know, they were scared and everything else. Well, the TV cameras walked in, and, oh, they treat us really well. I mean, what are they going to say? Because,
right,
you know. They have life and death in these people's hands. I think the funniest, strangest one is when I turned them in, is they went to, and this, I'm going to let Karen talk, because this is the clinic and the company that I worked with and worked for, and the nurse that did this I worked with. So is Karen on? Zabeth, please stay.
Oh, no, I'm staying, and I don't want to interrupt anyone, but because my memory banks are getting old, and no one has to answer this right now, but I...
Well, we'll talk after Karen. We'll talk after Karen because...
Okay, because maybe someone knows how it became not to be regulated.
Oh, yeah, we can go there, but let's listen to Karen.
All right, go ahead.
You guys have very many parallels.
Thank you.
Thanks, Zabeth. Karen?
Yeah, hello.
Hi. Your turn. You and Zabeth
well,
have very much a
hi,
parallel.
Hi, Karen. Very similar, yes. But also I do want to mention that my son, David, did not pass away in the car either.
Mm-hmm.
He passed away at home.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah,
so
I read
sorry.
That.
Sorry.
No, just a little thing. Anyway, my son David, also he lived with me, and so I knew his schedule. I took care of him. I fed him, took him to dialysis, picked him up, talked to the doctors and nurses and everything. He had dialysis on an off day on a Saturday, and this is with Fresenius. And I went to go pick him up, and normally he comes out about 4:15, about 4:30. He came out, and he was walking hunched over, holding his arm upon his chest. And I said, what's wrong? And he goes, they don't know what they're doing in there. I said, what do you mean? He said, I told them that when they disconnected me from the dialysis machine, the catheter in my heart pierced a hole in my heart or something.
Oh.
And so I went and I talked to him. They said, oh, he's only cramping. He'll be fine. So I took him home. He went into his bedroom and he laid down. He didn't eat much dinner, went back and laid down. And the next morning, I found him deceased.
How old was he, Karen?
He was 28.
Oh.
He was a dialysis patient for 6 years.
I'm so sorry.
I called up 911 immediately. They came, and then I called up his doctor, nephrologist, and I told him that, you know, that David had passed away. And they sent a coroner over to come pick the body. And the doctor did not want an autopsy done. And I explained to the doctor that, well, David told me when I picked him up at dialysis that they felt like they pierced his heart with the catheter. And the doctor screamed at me on the phone, that's impossible. And so I just, you know, got done talking to the doctor, and I told the medical examiner when she got here that I want an autopsy done. And she talked to the doctor, and the doctor said no autopsy was necessary because David died from natural causes related to dialysis. So I was arguing. I have 4 police officers in my house, and they all heard me, and they were shaking their heads. I was arguing with the medical examiner. We don't know why a perfectly, you know, otherwise healthy individual, young individual, suddenly passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He had been doing dialysis, and he did have off days where he didn't feel good, where he was cramping. That was normal, probably about 40% of the time, maybe 50% of the time. Anyway, so the coroner, the medical examiner, refused to do an autopsy because she said the doctor did not want one. And so I begged with her.
About,
I said, when the least,
Karen,
can
what
you
about
do a...
You wanted one.
Pardon me?
Didn't it matter? You wanted one. Didn't it matter what you wanted?
I did get a private autopsy done, yes. But
I'm
not there yet in my story. So
hey,
I asked the medical examiner, at least, take a blood test. You know, look, I want to make sure that if we have to test anything on his blood, that we got the samples. And so she reluctantly, all right, she went and took the blood test. And the next morning, she called me up, and she told me that she had to discard the blood test because the doctor, the nephrologist, ordered her to discard it because it wasn't necessary.
Oh.
I got on the phone, and I talked to some lawyers, and I ended up getting a private autopsy done with a forensic pathologist, and it was confirmed that sole cause of my son's death was a dialysis catheter pierced a hole in his heart. And so I requested medical records through the lawyer, and they charged me $650 for a box of flow sheets from the dialysis machine. A lot of records were not in there. I never was able to get all the medical records. And it's been a nightmare. I mean, I miss my son. Nobody can be held accountable for his death, though, because in Oregon, they have caps on non-economical loss at $500,000. My son had 6 years of dialysis, and Fresenius ended up charging Medicare about $4 million for his dialysis treatment and related medications. Because of the $500,000 cap, no lawyer will take a lawsuit when they know that Fresenius got all the money that they could, and then CMS, Medicare, puts a super lien on any judgment. So the measly $500,000 that could be awarded under the cap would have all gone directly back to CMS.
who have paid for the abuse. The thing is, too, the nurse, one of the nurses.
Yes, Peggy.
Yeah. I worked with
Peggy, Peggy Griffith. We've always known her by Peggy. Her name tag said Peggy. She always signed her name as Peggy. And after my son had passed away, I found out her name was not Peggy. It was actually Margaret Griffith. I know Peggy's a pet name for Margaret, but a lot of people don't know that. I didn't know that. I mean, Peggy and Margaret are totally two opposite names to me. I did some research on her, and I found out that she had her nursing license. She lost her license because she was dabbling in narcotics and alcohol. So, yeah, Fresenius had their head nurse, basically a drug addict. I don't know if she was doing drugs at the time. I, you know, don't have any proof of that. It's just, you know, her character, her history. So it's hard to deal with losing your son, you know, at a young age and not being able to hold anybody accountable for it. And I'm pretty sure that Fresenius knows that with the caps that they can't be sued. I just don't understand, well, now I do, why the nephrologist did not want an autopsy on a sudden unexplained death.
He also was up for a transplant, right, that they never gave him.
Right. He had three siblings that were willing to donate a kidney. We had been begging for a transplant for David since day one. They had him jumping through all these hoops, doing all these things that were ridiculous, that have no meaning, no bearing on his health whatsoever. They just kept stringing him along with all these absurd requirements that he had to do to get a transplant. One of them was that they wanted him to be self-sufficient and get a job and live in his own home and support himself. And we were doing dialysis 3 days a week. He ended up being on disability because he was unable to work, because on the days that he had dialysis, he always felt so sick, it took him 24 hours to recuperate from it. So they tried a lot of things with him. They tried to do a graft in his arm. Well, first of all, they collapsed one of his dialysis access in his wrist. That was the first one. He had a seizure, and he was not epileptic, but he did have a seizure in the dialysis clinic, and one of the nurses grabbed his wrist and collapsed his dialysis access, so they put a catheter in his heart. And that was supposed to be just temporary, you know, just for a couple of weeks, and then they were going to put a graft in his arm. So during the surgery, they put the graft in his arm, and he had to heal for about a month, and then they started doing dialysis on it. They did it a few times, and then it clogged up, so we had to go back to the access center where the nephrologist tried to dislodge the clot. And unknown at that time to anybody, the nephrologist rammed wires into the graft and punctured the graft multiple times, which led to David developing a massive infection in his forearm, about the size of a baseball. So they ended up having to take that out. And this was about a 2-month ordeal. So the whole time the hemocatheter was in his chest. So they took that out. And then they discovered, well, they pierced the graft, and that's what caused the infection. So then they tried to do PD dialysis, which is home dialysis. And they put another catheter in his stomach, had to heal for a bit. Then he went to the PD clinic. They found out that they implanted the wrong adapter for the PD machine in the clinic. So they had to take that out. And instead of just replacing the catheter and the adapter so it would be compatible, they just sewed him back up and kept the catheter back in his chest. Then they tried to do another access on his right breast, and they couldn't get that working. And so he was basically left with doing hemodialysis with a catheter in his chest and his heart. At the time when he passed away, he was supposed to be getting a hero graft. He was waiting for about 6 months to get a hero graft. The nephrologist said 6 months prior that he was a good candidate for a hero graft, but they never got around to doing it. And I just want to see, you know, justice done. Somebody needs to be held accountable. They got away with murder. And they know it, that they got away with it. And I highly doubt that my son is an isolated case. I think it happens quite often where the patients die for unknown or unnecessary reasons or reasons caused by their technicians. I think that they've killed a lot of people, you know, that could have been preventable. And what really bothers me the most, aside from my son's death, is the fact that he could have got a transplant. He should have had a transplant. Then Medicare wouldn't have had to pay millions of dollars, you know, for dialysis for six, you know, years. He could have been living, you know, and working. Yeah.
Karen, can I ask, what is a hero graft, you called it?
A hero graft, it goes up into the jugular vein.
Oh, good God.
Instead of going down into the heart, they had the tip of the catheter inside his right atrium in his heart. And
okay.
It's
disputable,
but it's very argumentative of that procedure being safe or not. But the nephrologist claims it's 100% safe. That it's impossible
obviously
to do
it
any
isn't.
Damage.
Yeah,
right.
It's obviously not true. Did you ever, just out of curiosity, did you ever confront the nephrologist himself?
Yes, that's why when I talked to him on the phone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what was his attitude towards you at the time?
Pardon me? I'm sorry, what was that?
What was your attitude at the time? His attitude.
Very nasty, very argumentative, that I was an idiot and didn't know what I was talking about.
What was the doctor's name? I worked with those nephrologists. Which one was it? I know they all kind of... Restel Clamp?
It was a Fresenius clinic.
Right.
And I can't think of his name at the top of my head right now. I basically want to just block it out.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
I'll think of it
and I'll
let you know. he is not a very good nephrologist, in my opinion. The way that he handled, you know, talking to me and was very argumentative, the way that he didn't want to do an autopsy. So I ended up filing complaints with the Oregon Medical Board against him.
Mm-hmm.
And after their investigation, they ended up sending the doctor a letter of concern. That
I bet that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they were aware of the situation and that it better not happen again, that he better watch himself.
Mm-hmm. I bet he was shaking in his shoes.
It was Dr. Reuben Chandran, Chandrin.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, this is the same company, Marty, that I quit due to ethical and moral reasons and reported it to the U.S. Senate. It was like working in a MASH unit when the for-profits came in. Greg, do you have anything? Gregory, do you have anything to say? Ask.
Good evening, Karen.
What was that?
Good evening, Karen.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, my name is Greg. I just wanted to ask you, when this situation first occurred, did they give you an official cause of death?
They said natural cause of death.
That was it.
Before the autopsy. And to this day, I cannot get his death certificate corrected. His death certificate, a legal document, is false information. Oh, my God. And they won't correct it? The nephrologist won't change it. He basically said, I have to take it to court to do it.
See, this is the only, this in dialysis, I've always said, with untrained technicians, earn as you learn, is that I think one of our lawyers said, the beauty is for the company is these technicians don't know that they killed somebody or harmed somebody, and you just bury the evidence.
Right. I know that the technicians at that clinic, I never spoke with them after that day that I picked my son up. I would have been enraged. I would have screamed at them, so I prevented myself from confronting them, and I seriously doubt anybody else told them. I do know from word of mouth in our little town that it's gone out and got around through the dialysis patients in that clinic that they all said that David died because David didn't take his medication, and that came from the nephrologist's mouth.
Yeah.
The patients were asking, what happened to David? And they were told by the technicians, well, David passed away because he didn't take his medication, which is a total untruth. I have it documented from the pharmacy when I picked up his medication, always on schedule when it was to be picked up, and he took his medication religiously. I saw to that. I made sure. His medication had a specific spot where it sat every day. I would get it and give it to him, and he would take it. So there's no question about whether he took his medication, but the nephrologist figured that was a good excuse to tell the other inquiring
patients.
That it
wasn't them.
Right.
That it wasn't them, it was David. See, that's what they do, and it's probably in his chart, too. I don't know, Beth, do you want to say anything?
This has been in the news. Hundreds and hundreds of people lose their life and die, and this is the worst death in the world, to die at the hands of stupidity. It is the worst death, and I believe some of, like you mentioned, I'm glad you said it, some of these technicians are like you and I. Come on, come off the street. Oh, that's easy. You can do it. Look, see me? Okay, now you do it. The other thing is I want to bring up is this happened to, I've heard of two stories. One was very sad. And one through the family was saved. They happened to be women, and they were here somewhere. How, first I'm going to start, how does a bus driver leave their bus without going up and down a quick second to see if there's any kids on it? Okay? The same is this. They leave their job and the patient is still sitting there. One woman, she died. The second one was near my house. My brother had gone to it for a very short time. Their mother or grandmother was not where she was supposed to be at the time that she usually is. And the family went down to the place, the clinic, that was closed. But because it was like a, you know, storefront, you know, the windows, you could walk by them, look in. The family happened to look in, and there was the mother all by herself. They quick called the police, and the police went in there and knocked it down. But I think, like us, that family whose mother or family member survived, I think you get a sense of not rocking their boat.
Well,
in so many words, they don't out and out threaten you lots of times, but you just know.
We had in Texas, there was a convict in jail, and it was a DaVita, and they were supposed to do dialysis. They had the contract with the prison system. They didn't show up. Mixed messages. The patient died, but they were brought up on manslaughter. Now, how come the jail system will make them accountable, but not anybody else on the outside?
Oh, that's a first. I haven't heard of that one.
Oh, yes. It's
wow.
In Texas.
But it was that group who rocked their boat.
What are you talking? I mean, I'm missing what I mean.
No. You said the convict, that group is the one who got through.
Correct.
The prison people.
Sued? No,
Zabeth,
it wasn't the prison people. The prison people did their job. It was DaVita that did not come in and dialyze him, and he passed.
Who sued them?
They brought him up in charges from the state. The federal prison has
no. That's what I'm saying. It took a prison to work it. You know.
But what I'm saying is they have accountability in the prison system.
That's what
yes,
I'm saying.
No
it took
accountability
them to do it.
For anybody. Well, it doesn't help everybody else until we get these laws passed.
No. But somebody managed to rock their boat. What is it? And how did they get away with never having any, what do you call it?
Standard of care? Well, I'll tell you, we just have a few more minutes. The reason they get away is because there is no standard of care in dialysis. Every company and every clinic makes their own policy. So, therefore, they're free to make their own rules. Now,
okay.
if the State Department of Health comes in and they say they have three nurses and they have one, they get nicked because they did not follow their policy. So if they come in and, let's see, they're found some other, they have 30 days to correct it. And they have to write to the state and tell them what they're going to do to correct that action. The state comes back in 30 days later to see if they did make the changes. However, if they see somebody dragging a bloodline across the floor, they write them up. They have 30 more days to do that one. So, I mean, it's just a joke. Plus, when I complained, I went into work. I was starting the machines in the morning. It was my turn. I started them at 5 in the morning. I had called the network, and the network, how can you explain to me how we had the Godzilla's list on how to pass a survey? They're always pre-warned when they're coming to clean up their act. Always.
Wow.
So, and no matter where you go to complain, we have one that went to the White House. We have those 14 patients who complained to the state of Georgia, to their federal senator, Johnny Iverson, and they turn it back to, when they complained, they gave it to HHS, turned it down to CMS, who gave it to the network. They started terminating those patients until we could stop them.
Jesus.
So no matter where you go, well, the civil rights, if you go for civil rights, ADA, the ones that are supposed to protect everybody is anything but in dialysis, because the networks have the contract for patient care for the government. So that's where they send it. It's a circle of violence that patients cannot get away from. Greg, do you have anything to say?
No, I just wanted to thank Zabeth and Kern for sharing their story. I know it was very painful to relive it again, and I hope that this situation changes soon, because each day it remains the same.
Yes.
Far too many lives are lost.
Yep.
Yeah. Jiminy. We're down to the last few minutes here, everyone. I want to thank you, Karen, I'm just not sure how to say your name. I can't.
Zabeth.
Okay. Okay. I don't know why I'm having difficulty. Zabeth. Okay. All right. I want to thank you for coming on. Karen, I hope you get success in getting that certificate changed. And if there's anything we can do to help you get that done, please let us know, even if it's just to lend support and apply pressure. Every week that we do this show, I'm just stunned. I had no idea. I hate to even admit this until I was in contact with Arlene. I met her last year at the summit, that any of this was going on. I don't think 99% of the people out there had any clue this was going on and what danger people are in when they become subject to dialysis. This is actually a life-threatening situation, and not so much from whatever is causing the need from the dialysis, but the people providing the dialysis. There is more of a threat there, I think, than anywhere. I can't imagine the psychological pressure put on the patients and the families when you know that this quiet threat is constantly there. That has got to be a tremendous burden to carry along with everything else. We got to get this out there, Arlene. We got to do something. This is just...
Well, I think you know what's coming down. But, you know, the thing is that Karen and Zabeth, a lot of families do not understand when the patients go home and they don't feel supported, because the family does not believe it's really truly happening. And what did you do? Zabeth and Karen.
No, I did. I defended my brother all the time.
That's
He's driving
what I
us
said.
Crazy, always looking for water.
Yeah, so. But what I'm saying is you were there, you and Karen were there for your loved ones. A lot of patients do not have that luxury.
I know. And
they are afraid. I mean, they also, we are finding now they're taking away power of attorneys. And really, they're doing what they want with these patients. And the family is out of the loop, because they say that patient is cognitive. We can talk to them. We have a special way of talking, and it's not true. Thank you guys for coming on, Greg.
Thank you so much.
And I want to thank everybody for tuning in this evening. We had a huge crowd here, Arlene, so the news is getting out. Karen, Zabeth, thank you so much. And Greg, as always, thank you for being on with us. We'll be back next week with another episode of Dialysis Advocates. Again, a reminder, please come to the Whistleblower Summit July 29th, 30th, and 31st this year in Washington, D.C. Arlene and I will both be there. Until next week, everyone, have a good evening.
Thank you.
Stand up, for God's sake. We need help.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. I wish you all well.
Good night.